Hey folks, this is Carrie Arentekai reading Keep Track of Losing Days by, it might be Drafter. I haven't for sure confirmed, but we'll go with that for now. Okay, chapter two, roommates. I guess I didn't give the name of chapter one, did I? Chapter one was called Missing Person. Chapter two is Roommates. The summary of the chapter has stuff that I think is in the chapter, so we won't read it. Wei Ying's roommate, Wen Qing, is tiny and stunning, with long sooty eyelashes and a perfect rosebud mouth. Wang Ji knows that she and Wei Ying went to Lakeside together. He can't help wondering if they met each other at some sort of impossibly good-looking people club. She should look like a model, but she carries herself like a general, wearing her soft maroon scrubs like they're chainmail. She's visibly unimpressed with the police detectives in her living room. "The last time I saw him was Monday morning," she says evenly. Her hands are dwarfed by her gigantic coffee mug. "He was planning to go to his sister's house for dinner after work. He often does." "You didn't worry when he didn't come home?" Niemingjue asks. "I was on a surgical rotation. I didn't even get home again until Tuesday afternoon, and I went straight to bed and slept until Wednesday morning." She takes a measured sip of coffee. "It's not unusual for me to go several days without seeing Wei Wuxian." Niemingjue grunts. "Not the worst setup with a roommate."
"It works well for us."
Wang Qi's been in the apartment before, once, but it was at night, and he'd been distracted by the drunken fool yammering at him. In daylight, he's surprised to see how small it is. The living room is made even smaller by the bookshelves lining the walls, crammed with books and papers and DVDs and a random assortment of three people's belongings. There are posters from bands Wang Ji hasn't heard of, movies he's never seen. The kitchen is small and grimy, the ancient-looking tile bearing years of baked-in grease. When he and Si Chen had moved into the building, the property manager had explained that he's renovating the place unit by unit. Every time someone moves out, he guts the apartment and puts in all new paint, carpet, and fixtures. Then, Wang Ji assumes, jacks up the rent commensurate with the updated look. He knows this, but it's still hard to believe this dingy, cramped little space is in the same building as his spacious, sunlit, energy-efficient apartment.
"Who else lives here with the two of you?" Niemingjue is asking.
"My younger brother, Wen Ying. He's at work right now."
"You have a contact number for him you could give us?"
She eyes Niemingjue warily. Clearly, she doesn't want to give him her brother's number, which doesn't necessarily mean anything. Lots of people are leery of cops, all the more so here in the International District, where there's such a large immigrant community. After a long hesitation, she scribbles down a number on a notepad, hands the torn-off paper to Niemingjue. "This is his cell, but I should warn you, he usually doesn't answer." The barest smile crosses her face. For some reason, it makes her look sad. "He's always forgetting to charge it."
"Do you have any idea where Wei Wuxian might be?"
"No, I don't." Her gaze is direct, her voice calm and level. If she's lying, she's a good liar.
"Anyone who might have wanted to harm him? Any reason he might have wanted to leave town?"
"No."
"Anywhere he might be staying? Friends? Maybe a girlfriend? Boyfriend?"
She darts a glance at Wang Ji, so quickly he thinks he might have imagined it.
"No. Well, I don't know all his friends, but nobody comes to mind."
Wang Ji thinks about the envelope stuffed in Wei Ying's pocket. XOXOXY. "Do the initials XY mean anything to you?" A microscopic hesitation. "Unless you're talking about heterogametic sex chromosomes in humans, no." And she is a good liar, but Wang Ji is pretty sure that's a lie. Something else about the envelope is sticking in Wang Ji's brain. He clears his mind and tries to focus on it, missing the question Niemingjue asks next and her response. And then he has it.
"Wen Qing,"
he says out loud. Wen Qing sighs, looking down at her coffee mug. "Yes." Her shoulders hunch in slightly, waiting for the blow. Maybe for the first time in his life, Wang Ji wishes he'd paid more attention to his father and his uncles and their near encyclopedic knowledge of seemingly every Chinese-American family in the Pacific Northwest. He's always dreaded the "who are they and who is their family" conversation, but in this case, the information would have come in handy. Naming Tui makes a "hmm" sound. Wang Ji can practically hear the wheels starting to turn in his partner's head. Related to Wen Rohan. She sighs again and takes a long sip of her coffee. He's my uncle. Everyone in the SPD has heard of Wen Rohan, a local crime lord with suspected ties to Hong Kong triads. He's responsible for a number of enterprises of varying levels of criminality and the owner of several local businesses, including the Nightless City nightclub. Major Crimes has been trying to pin something substantial on him for years to no avail. There's always some low-level flunky available to take the fall while the boss stays clean. When was the last time you saw your uncle? He asks. I haven't spoken to him in years, she says, raising her knife-point chin. I don't see what that has to do with Wei Wuxian. Maybe nothing, Wang Ji thinks. Maybe more than you think. All right, if we look around Wei Wuxian's bedroom, Niaming Tui asks. Her eyes flash. Wang Ji can hear the word warrant as clearly as if she'd spoken it aloud. Please, he says quietly. We just want to find him. He has no idea if she knows who he is, if she's ever seen him in the hallway or at the cafe, if Wei Ying has ever so much as mentioned his name. He has no way to explain to her what he and Wei Ying are to each other. He doesn't have a word for it himself. I have to find him. She studies him for a moment, her brows drawn together in thought. Whatever she sees in his face, it seems to satisfy her. Her posture relents slightly. Don't mess anything up. Niaming Tui is now seriously trying to catch his eye, but Wang Ji keeps his eyes straight ahead. When he was here before, he'd been so distracted he hadn't really formed an impression beyond messy. But the bedroom Wei Ying shares with Wen Qing's brother is a fascinating glimpse into the lives of two different people coexisting in a small space. The overall effect is that of a relatively tidy young man who loves camping and ultimate frisbee, sharing a room with a tornado who plays the flute. The top bunk is haphazardly made up, in the pull-the-covers-back-after-you-get-out style of bedmaking that Wang Ji's uncle views as a personal affront. The bottom bunk looks like a badger has been nesting in it. Bunk beds are fun and practical, Lan Zhan. Wei Ying is almost unbearably present in the small space. Wang Ji can see him, leaning back in the desk chair, his long legs propped up on his bed, holding forth on some topic. He can imagine Wei Ying twisting a strand of hair around his finger while hunched over a book, or flopped on the bottom bunk, complaining about having to get up. The closet is a mishmash of jeans and cargo shorts, fleece pullovers and ratty concert t-shirts, camping gear. He leaves it to Niaming Tui to rifle through the dresser drawers. The idea of handling Wei Ying's underwear is far too intimate to be proper in this scenario. Wang Ji lets his fingers trail over the spines of the books on the low, overstuffed shelf. Cybersecurity in the Digital Age. Slaughterhouse-5. Best Northwest Day Hikes. Charlotte's Web. On top of the dresser, he finds hair ties and carabiners, chewed up pencils, empty gum wrappers, a discarded red ribbon, a stack of music books. Wei Ying's flute case is sitting on top. The case is battered and worn, the clasps creaking a little under Wang Ji's thumbs, but the flute inside has been lovingly cleaned and maintained. Wang Ji stares down at it, nestled into the case's soft lining, and feels his throat close entirely. He has to hope that neither his partner nor Wei Ying's roommate are looking at him, because just for a few seconds he's utterly lost. He can't be a detective at all. He's just a man holding a flute, staring into the case like he'll be able to read Wei Ying's fate in it. I should have figured you were an orchestra nerd. No wonder we get along so well. The lining is coming up on one side. He swallows heavily and presses it back down, and hears something scrape. Huh. Using a pencil, he gently lifts the lining away from the side of the case. Underneath is an RFID card, the kind you'd used to gain entry to some locked door. No identifying marks, just a serial number. Wang Ji slips it into an evidence bag. A lot of computer stuff, Niaming Tui rumbles, poking through the strata of small tools, magnifying lenses, and electronics in varying states of disassembly on the desk. Wei Bishan is a computer genius, says Wen Qing from where she leans in the doorway. He picks up side projects for extra cash when he can get them.
If he's such a genius, why is he a waiter?
Wang Ji turns to fix Naming Jue with an icy glower, but Wen Qing is way ahead of him in that department. Not a ton of full-time developer jobs for felons with no college degree, she sneers at him. One of the many ways the American criminal justice system keeps poor people poor.
Poor people do have the option of not committing crimes,
Naming Jue mutters, rolling his eyes. Yeah? Wen Qing folds her arms. You ever get in a fist fight in high school? Big scary guy like you, I bet you did.
Naming Jue snorts.
Yeah, a few.
You go to prison for it?
Naming Jue opens his mouth on a retort, but catches sight of Wang Ji glaring at him. Naming Jue glares back.
No, he admits.
Yeah, that's privilege. She laughs a little bitterly. One mistake shouldn't fuck up someone's life. She directs this last comment to Wang Ji, as though issuing a challenge. But it isn't a challenge he wants to take. She's right, and she sounds just like Wei Ying. He nods, acknowledging her point, and turns away. A handful of photos are tacked up over the desk. Wei Ying, Wen Qing, and a tall, smiling man who has Wen Qing's same rosebud mouth, Wen Ying, he assumes, standing on top of Mount Rainier. The three of them wearing sunglasses on a blanket in a park somewhere. Wei Ying mugging for the camera while Wen Qing looks coolly off into the middle distance. A child's school picture. Wang Ji recognizes the child as Yuan, Wen Qing's little cousin, who he met once. A chubby, scowling baby. Wei Ying with his arms around a young woman with an angelic smile. That same woman, grinning widely with Wei Ying and a younger, more relaxed-looking Jiang Wenyin at what appears to be a Mariners game, giving them both bunny ears. Wen Qing in her purple doctoral robes, looking irritated. Moments from a life of which Wang Ji has had very little part. For it to be affecting him so profoundly.
This is laptop? Naming Jue asks. We'll need to take it in.
I'll need an itemized receipt for everything you take, Wen Qing says.
Of course.
Naming Jue manages to sound polite and deeply sarcastic at the same time.
Good luck getting anything off his machine, Wen Qing adds.
He built it himself. It's probably encrypted to hell and back. They fill out the requisite forms for everything they've collected. The laptop, the RFID card, a couple more notebooks, a matchbook from Nightless City, and leave Wen Qing with their business cards, encouraging her to call if she hears from Wei Ying or thinks of anything else that might be useful.
Tough customer, Naming Jue says, once they're safely out in the hall.
Wang Ji is getting tired, his mind starting to flag with the joint effort of talking to people all day and trying not to freak out.
You think she was telling the truth?
He says again, this time meaning, I'm not sure.
Not the whole truth. Well, let's see what we can get from what we have so far. We can always go back and talk to her again. It's not like it's out of your way.
Wang Ji walks past the elevator to the stairwell.
Would you like to come for dinner?
He badly wants to be alone, to give his whirling thoughts a chance to settle into a theory on Wei Ying's whereabouts. He also wants his brother to break up with his creepy boyfriend and fall madly in love with Naming Jue, thus freeing Wang Ji from said creepy boyfriend and from the sight of Naming Jue's nonstop pining. He can't work on the former task while he eats, so he might as well make progress on the latter.
That's okay. I don't want to intrude on you guys.
You would not be intruding. I already texted Si Chen. He would like to see you. Naming Jue does his best to hide a smile at that.
I need to run this evidence back to the station, get everything logged, he says. Give me an hour.
We eat at 7, Wang Ji says, as always.
What's he cooking?
Wang Ji holds the stairwell door open for him.
The occasional vegetarian meal will not kill you.
Scene break, and we are back into a flashback. Wei Ying is sitting up straight for once. Wang Ji can see his upright posture silhouetted against the evening sky. As Wang Ji walks out onto the roof, he's surprised to see that Wei Ying is, of all things, playing a flute. A soft melody drifts outwards around him, tinged with a hint of melancholy. It sounds like one of Bach's flute sonatas. Wang Ji's not sure which one, although Si Chen would probably know. He stands there for a minute, watching Wei Ying play. His breath control is excellent, and he leans into the extended notes with real feeling, coming lightly into the trills and flutters, his quick fingers moving with confidence. A light breeze catches the end of his hair, and of the red ribbon holding it back from his face. The sound pulls at something within Wang Ji, a gentle, mournful sensation drawn from his chest. Wang Ji waits until the last, sustained note fades into silence before stepping forward. Lan Zhan! Wei Ying smiles at him, a faint pink sweeping across his cheeks and into his ears. Sorry, were you trying to get my attention? I get kind of in the zone when I'm practicing.
You play very well, Wang Ji says, settling down next to him.
Well, thanks, Wei Ying says. That's a big compliment coming from you. Wang Ji blinks at him. Wei Ying leans in, holding a hand up to shield his mouth like he's going to tell Wang Ji a secret.
I googled you, he says in a stage whisper.
Wang Ji has no idea what to say to that.
Oh.
I had no idea you were a violinist. I watched a YouTube video of you playing at Benaroya, I'm assuming, of you playing at Benaroya Hall. I don't think I've ever seen someone that young with so much musical sensibility. The Sibelius isn't easy, and you were so... He makes a fluid gesture, searching for the right word. Attuned to the other musicians. You're really talented.
That had been one of his last public performances, which is probably a weird thing to say in response to a compliment.
Thank you. Do you still play?
My brother plays the oboe. We play together occasionally.
You should bring your violin up to the roof sometime. We could play together.
Wei Ying's eyes crinkle in excitement.
He can feel it, how it would feel to play with Wei Ying, the give and take of it, building the sound together. Wei Ying is creative and clever, and clearly has decent technical chops. It would be a pleasurable way to spend an evening.
Maybe.
I mean, I'm no child prodigy, but I like to play when I get a chance. Usually I'm just up here playing to the seagulls, though.
Wei Ying begins to disassemble the flute, cleaning each piece with gentle practice movements before slotting it back into the case.
I should have figured you were an orchestra nerd. No wonder we get along so well.
Do they get along well? Wang Ji thinks they do, but he's not always sure when it comes to other people. I didn't know you played the flute, he says inanely. Why would he know that?
Oh, yes, Wei Ying drawls, tossing his hair over one shoulder with his pinky extended in a gesture of pretend fanciness. I'm a man of many useless and bourgeois talents.
Oh.
Wei Ying arches a languid eyebrow.
Would you believe that I was also an accomplished archer once upon a time?
He scoffs, dropping the faux fancy act, and his smile crumples into something more complicated, sadder.
Fuck, that feels like a million years ago.
Wang Ji does not ask him what happened. Wei Ying has just done him the profound courtesy of not asking the same. Wei Ying stares into his flute case, eyes focused on something in the past that Wang Ji can't see. After a long moment, he laughs and shakes his head.
Man, I mean, don't get me wrong, I do not miss high school. But I do miss playing in the orchestra. It was like being in a little family.
He sighs, imbuing the word with impossible wistfulness. Just like spending so much time with the same people, all the rehearsing and the in-jokes and the drama. He laughs.
Well, maybe you didn't have the drama. I don't know if violins have drama, but at Lakeside there was always a ton of woodwinds drama.
Wang Ji doesn't know if there had been violin drama in his high school orchestra or not. If so, he wouldn't have been part of it.
But no, of course Lan Zhan wouldn't be involved in something as petty as orchestra drama.
Wei Ying, wouldn't be involved in something as petty as orchestra drama. Wei Ying teases him.
Lan Zhan is far too serious.
He makes a mock serious face. Wang Ji snorts and shakes his head.
I can just imagine you striding through the halls with your violin case. I bet the whole string section was in love with you.
Wei Ying flashes him a wicked, teasing smile.
Wang Ji shifts uncomfortably.
Si Chen had moved through school like a bird through the air, but Si Chen was student council president and captain of the wrestling team, not to mention being best friends with Nie Mingjue, who had a fake ID and whose parents were always out of town. Wang Ji was precisely none of these things. He studied too much and spoke too little and was a little too famous besides. Had played with a few too many real orchestras, had auditioned and competed and won against a few too many of his fellow violinists for them to welcome him into their midst with open arms. No. Oh, right, Wei Ying says with the roll of his eyes. You're nice and mega hot and super talented. People hate that, I forgot. Wang Ji frowns at his thumb. He knows Wei Ying is just messing with him, but it's disconcerting the way he flirts like this. Like it doesn't matter, like it doesn't mean anything. Wei Ying has finished packing up his flute. He rummages around in the tote bag at his side and wriggles into a denim jacket, then pulls out a bottle of cheap white wine. You see, I'm really a very fancy and sophisticated person, he says, mouth twisting with irony. Want some? He holds out the bottle. No, thank you. Wei Ying knows Wang Ji doesn't drink, but he still usually offers, which is bizarrely polite of him. Suit yourself. He unscrews the cap and takes a long swig directly from the bottle. Wang Ji hurriedly looks away from Wei Ying's bare, elongated throat, focusing instead on the many buttons, pins, and patches decorating his denim jacket. A chili pepper on fire, a smiling bowl of noodles, a hammer and sickle, abolish ice, a lotus flower, a grinning, winking Mount Rainier, trans rights or human rights, the Jiang Microsystems logo, a little green creature that Wang Ji thinks is probably a Pokemon, just a little bifurious, music notes, polite as fuck, a blue, pink, and purple striped heart. Black Lives Matter. A sriracha bottle. A peach-shaped Just Peachy pin. The anarchy symbol. A cab. A coffee cup. Science is real. A little space needle. I don't have a dirty mind. I have a sexy imagination. Wang Ji shakes his head. Shameless, he thinks. Do my buttons offend you? Wei Ying asks. His voice is casual, but he's eyeing Wang Ji carefully. No, I agree with many of them. But not all of them. Wang Ji shrugs. I've always disliked the space needle. What? Wei Ying guffaws. You hate the space needle? Why? It's a meaningless attraction. It exists only to be a tourist draw. He frowns, marshaling his thoughts. The 1962 World's Fair is not worth commemorating. Plus, the restaurant at the top is terrible, Wei Ying points out. People always want to go there when they visit from out of town, Wei Ying adds, eyes sparkling, getting into the spirit of it now. And it's so boring to actually go. Parking in Lower Queen Anne is always difficult. Well, Wei Ying chuckles into his wine, you've really opened my eyes, Lan Zhan. Good thing you were here to enlighten me. Good thing, Wang Ji murmurs. End of flashback. He lets the door to his apartment swing shut behind him and stands in the entryway a moment, eyes closed, just breathing. The panic that's been beating at the walls of his chest all day claws its way up into his mouth and down into his legs. And Wang Ji can only stand and breathe and let it take him. Wei Ying is missing. Wei Ying is gone. Wei Ying will not be up on the roof tonight drinking and making fun of Wang Ji's posture and laughing his electrifying laugh because he has vanished. Wei Ying might be hurt. He might be scared. He's almost certainly in some kind of trouble. He might be... Wang Ji? He can hear his brother calling from the kitchen. He gulps a breath and another. He gathers his fear and worry up and shoves it firmly back down into his chest. He doesn't have time for this. Si Chen wanders into the entryway. He's got an apron on over his cardigan and jeans. It's Thursday, which means he didn't have a lecture today. He's holding a spatula. Wang Ji attempts to school his face into something resembling its usual impassivity, but he may as well not have bothered. Si Chen sees him, and his eyes immediately widen in concern. His brother has always been able to read him when no one else can. What's wrong? Wang Ji closes his eyes again, just for a second. Wei Ying is missing. Your friend from the building? Si Chen frowns and moves closer to him, scrutinizing his face. What happened? I don't know yet. The panic in Wang Ji's chest is slowly fading into a dull, hollow misery.
We got the case this morning.
Xichen's eyes are kind and full of sympathy. He doesn't hug Wang Ji. Lan Qiren's nephews do not hug each other, even after almost a decade outside of their uncle's house. He simply puts his hands on Wang Ji's shoulders, squeezing firmly. Gratefully, Wang Ji lets himself lean into his brother's familiar grounding touch, imagining Xichen's steady, peaceful nature seeping into him. It's a posture they've been in together countless times over the years since their parents died.
Are you all right? Xichen asks after a few moments have passed.
Wang Ji presses against him once more, then stands up straight.
Is Daga still coming for dinner?
Yes. Wang Ji bends to remove his shoes.
Wonderful, Xichen beams, because he's the nicest man in the world. Ai Yao is here too. We'll have a nice little dinner party.
Wang Ji neither groans nor rolls his eyes as he follows Xichen into the living room, where Meng Yao is perched on the sofa with a cup of tea. Expressing his disapproval for his brother's odious boyfriend would not be kind to Xichen.
Lan Wang Ji, Meng Yao says warmly, standing up and smiling his pat, dimpled smile. It's nice to see you.
Meng Yao, Wang Ji replies with a nod. Having cultivated an image of awkward aloofness occasionally allows Wang Ji to viciously snub people without their really registering it. He wants to like Meng Yao, or at the very least, he wants to like him. He suspects that his vehement distrust of his brother's boyfriend is a personal failing on his own part, and feels appropriately guilty about it, but something about the man just sets Wang Ji's teeth on edge. Meng Yao has certainly given Wang Ji no specific reason to dislike him. He's unfailingly friendly, almost nauseatingly courteous, and seems to genuinely dote on Xichen. He's always making thoughtful little gestures that might be performative and self-serving, or might just seem that way because Wang Ji already doesn't like him. He's smooth and cool and unctuous as a bowl of cream, and just as unappetizing to Wang Ji's tastes.
I hope you don't mind that I'm joining you for dinner, Meng Yao says now, with a supercilious little smile that says, even if you did mind, I know you're too polite to say so.
Ahuan's cooking is too good. I can never pass up the offer. Xichen takes his hand with a soft, adoring look.
Of course you're welcome to join us, Wang Ji says mechanically.
He turns to Xichen.
I've had a long day. If you don't mind, I'm going to lie down for a few minutes before Nie Mingjue gets here.
Xichen nods, his eyes full of compassion.
Call me if you need anything.
A stress headache is just beginning to throb behind Wang Ji's temples. He takes a Tylenol, draining the glass of water he washes it down with, which does nothing to make his mouth less dry. He does lie down, but doesn't close his eyes. He stares at the ceiling, feeling the blood pulsing in his ears, not really thinking anything. Eventually, he pulls out his phone.
Lan Wangji, your brother is coming over for dinner tonight.
Nie Huaisang, yes, get it, Daga. Can you, like, light some candles and put on some Barry White and peace out?
Lan Wangji, Meng Yao is here too.
Nie Huaisang, vomiting emoji, vomiting emoji, vomiting emoji.
What the fuck is Cock Bloctopus doing there?
Cock Bloctopus? Sorry, I need a second to laugh about that and then cough. A plus. Okay.
Lan Wangji, Xichen invited him.
Nie Huaisang, of course he did. Ugh.
Lan Wangji, should I tell Mingjue not to come?
Nie Huaisang, no way, man. If Project Nie Lan is a go, we have to overcome all obstacles. Can't let that little fucker get the upper hand.
Lan Wangji, this dinner is going to be 1,000 years long.
Nie Huaisang, sorry, bro. Vaguely frowny, kind of distressed face. Not sure what that one is called. I don't know. I didn't look it up in advance. Okay. Sorry, bro. You got this. Just be a huge bitch like you are to everyone. It'll be fine.
Wang Ji snorts and lets his phone fall to his side. He covers his eyes with the other hand.
Quick reader's break here. There's going to be more on this in a sec, but I love Nie Huaisang, Lan Wangji friendship fics. I think that's just so good. I love it. Okay.
He and Nie Huaisang had never been friends in high school.
They'd seen each other at the Chinese community center and at their respective older brothers' fencing and wrestling meets, but they'd barely interacted. Nehuai Sung was busy running around with a bunch of the art kids, orchestrating elaborate pranks in which he was never implicated. Wang Ji was busy practicing the violin and not talking to anyone. "I was terrified of you in high school," Nehuai Sung had once confessed over coffee. "I was sure you hated me. If I'd known you just had terminal resting bitch face, we could have hung out more." After Wang Ji started working with Nieming Jue, Nehuai Sung might have absorbed him into his little circle of friends anyway, given their frequent proximity and shared history. Once it became clear that Nieming Jue's complete and debilitating crush on Si Chen had only gotten more intense since high school, though, Nehuai Sung had made good and sure that Wang Ji was enlisted into his matchmaking schemes, and that had really cemented their friendship. Wang Ji smiles a little, thinking about his brother in the other room, blissfully unaware of the plot to break up his happy relationship with that complete tool. If their uncle Qiren knew that Wang Ji was conspiring to get Si Chen to break up with his polite, respectful boyfriend with the well-paying corporate job, so he could be fixed up with Wang Ji's belligerent, mohawked motorcycle-riding partner, he'd have a heart attack. Right after he was done having a heart attack about Si Chen dating men in the first place, and about 100 other heart attacks about Wang Ji and Si Chen's lives, which might at least finally put the "when are you both moving back to Bellingham like the obedient nephews I raised" conversation to rest. His phone buzzes with a text from Nieming Jue. "I'm downstairs." Wang Ji presses the button to let him into the building and goes to meet his partner at the door. He can't let Nieming Jue walk into a Meng Yao ambush unprepared. Nieming Jue has... so sad. Nieming Jue has changed into a nicer shirt, freshly buzzed the sides of his mohawk, and put on cologne since leaving Wang Ji in the hallway an hour ago. He's trying so hard. It would be a little pathetic if Wang Ji weren't so firmly on his side. "Come in," Wang Ji says. "Ge and Meng Yao are in the kitchen." He waits for Nieming Jue's face to complete its journey from crestfallen to angry to fiercely determined and back to his usual curmudgeonly scowl before ushering him into the apartment. Dinner isn't as terrible as it could be. Si Chen is glowing with happiness at having his boyfriend, his best friend, and his brother all sharing a meal together, and Meng Yao and Nieming Jue are both made too soft by Si Chen's joy to do more than half-heartedly snipe at each other. "Wang Ji tells me you have a new missing persons case," Si Chen asks at one point. Even 10 years out of their uncle's house, Wang Ji still feels weird being allowed to speak during meals, but Si Chen always knows how to make people feel comfortable around their table. Nieming Jue nods, his mouth full of noodles. "Guy from your building, actually. Mui Wishan, do you know him?"
"No, but I believe Wang Ji does."
Wang Ji nods.
"How distressing," Meng Yao interjects. "Do you know what could have happened to him?"
"Well, he's gone missing." Nieming Jue's tone is withering.
"I'm sure you'll track him down,"
Meng Yao says with a pleasant smile that doesn't reach his eyes.
"He's lucky to have the two of you working to find him."
Nieming Jue grunts. Wang Ji chews.
"How is work, Ai Yao?"
Si Chen asks before the silence can draw out too long.
"Very busy," Meng Yao says. "My father is working on a new acquisition. Of course, I can't share too many of the details."
He chuckles self-importantly. "But it's a very exciting niche for us to move into." "How is your dad these days?" Nieming Jue asks. "Did they ever settle that? What was it? Labor dispute?"
"Daga,"
Si Chen admonishes him quietly. Meng Yao pats Si Chen's hand like Si Chen is a child. Wang Ji's chopsticks clack against his bowl as he picks up a piece of bok choy with perhaps more force than is necessary.
"It's all right," Meng Yao says. "Nieming Jue is right to be concerned. No one was more shocked than I was at the condition of our overseas facilities. But as I told my father after the report came out, we should regard this as an opportunity to overhaul our whole supply chain, to make sure these sorts of oversights can't be made in the future."
"I'm sure he loved hearing that," Nieming Jue smiled.
"Ai Yao has done a lot to make Jincor a more ethical place," Si Chen says. "It's a lot like the work that you and Wang Ji are doing within the SPD. Great change for good can come from within."
Wang Ji doesn't think that working for justice within a law enforcement agency hamstrung by internal politics and backbiting is at all the same as being given a meaningless corporate job by your absentee father after a DNA test forces his hand, But Si Chen always sees the best in people.
Of course, Si Chen's voice takes on a teasing tone. Dagu just became a cop because it's the only remaining profession where it's acceptable to have a mustache.
Yiming Jue laughs, the hearty laugh from his belly he only laughs for Si Chen.
And you only became a college professor so you'd never have to leave school, Arda.
RD. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
RD. Yeah.
That's Dr. RD to you, Si Chen grins.
Don't say that too loud, Professor Lan. Someone might think you're a real doctor.
Wang Ji wishes he could take a video. Ni Huaisang would be squealing like a schoolgirl.
Ah Huan is a real doctor, Meng Yao protests.
There's an awkward silence.
He knows that, sweetheart, Si Chen says.
The smile dies on Ye Mingjue's face like it was never there.
I'm sorry, I just get protective of you.
Meng Yao gives Si Chen big puppy eyes.
A PhD is a real accomplishment, and you should be proud of it.
Of course he should be proud of it,
Ye Mingjue mumbles.
It's just a joke, Ai Yao, Si Chen says kindly. Daga is just teasing me.
Meng Yao's smile is sweet and sincere and apologetic, and Wang Ji hates him so much.
I'm sorry, Ye Mingjue. I guess I'm not used to your sense of humor.
Ye Mingjue destroys a piece of tofu with extreme prejudice.
Don't worry about it.
Back to flashback. He's become a regular at the cafe, without being totally sure about how it happened. Well, he knows how it happened. It happened because he kept coming here. That's how one becomes a regular. It's not just that Wei Ying is attractive, although he is. Meng Ji is not in the habit of self-deception, and he can readily admit that Wei Ying's features are pleasing, that the lines of his body draw the eye. He's charming, too, when he wants to be. The neighborhood aunties are practically lining up for his particular brand of respectful flirtation. Meng Ji is not immune to these things. To Wei Ying's electric wit or his delicate wrists or his cheekbone bravado. But Wang Ji has been around attractive people before, and none of them took up the mental real estate Wei Ying appears to have effortlessly claimed. Part of it is that Wei Ying is brilliant. He's a never-ending fountain of thoughts and ideas. And his way of looking at things is so different from Wang Ji's that it keeps forcing Wang Ji to consider old viewpoints in a new light. Occasionally, some tossed-off comment of Wei Ying's will lodge itself deep into Wang Ji's brain, and he'll end up mentally chewing on it for days. It's very stimulating, being around Wei Ying. Part of it is that Wei Ying is always teasing, but never mean. He teases Wang Ji about things like his ramrod straight posture, or his perfectly ironed clothing, or the precise little bites he takes when he eats. Things about how Wang Ji is, but never about who he is. Little jabs and pokes designed to draw Wang Ji out, to encourage him to take himself less seriously. After that first snarky comment the day they met, Wei Ying never mentions Wang Ji's taciturnity. He never stops talking, but somehow makes space for Wang Ji to speak when he wants to speak. After a few interactions, Wang Ji realizes, somewhat self-consciously, that Wei Ying reminds him of his mother. Eating at the cafe is not restful. It's not relaxing. It's none of the words Wang Ji would use to describe a pleasant dining experience. Wei Ying continues to be the loudest person in the world, and his stubborn declaration that they are friends has meant an alarming uptick in the overall decibel level. Is it decibel or decibel? It's decibel. Level of Wang Ji's life. Despite the fact that his new friend is loud and rude and utterly shameless, terrible with boundaries and slippery as an eel with information about himself, Wang Ji can't seem to stop seeking him out. It's the kind of sunny Saturday morning that makes everyone in Seattle delirious with happiness. The mountain is white and striking against a clear blue sky. The water sparkles with sunlight, and every available patio, balcony, and rooftop is packed with people eager to soak up some rays along with their brunch. The cafe doesn't have outdoor seating, but there's still a brisk brunch rush going on. And the sun seems to have thawed out the patrons' usual northwestern reserve. The atmosphere is almost boisterous. Wang Ji holds the door open for a young mother, pushing a baby in a stroller while gripping a toddler firmly by the hand. She gives him a grateful, exhausted smile, and he pulls a chair out of her way as she makes her way over to the to-go counter.
I want a donut, the toddler is whining.
We're not getting a donut, but you can have some fruit and a muffin, his mother responds. Wang Ji is reading his book at his usual spot, waiting for Wei Ying to have a chance to bring him some tea when it happens. Attempting to juggle stroller, diaper bag, and the toddler pulling at her jacket, the young mother drops a full 16-ounce latte on the floor. It explodes everywhere, a tidal wave of milk and coffee rolling outward from it. She bursts into tears. Wang Ji starts to get up to help her, but Wei Ying is there before the cup can even roll to a stop, ushering her to a chair, helping settle her belongings, getting her a new latte, reassuring her even as he mops that these things happen all the time. He ends up handling his tables while carrying the toddler on his hip, whispering ridiculous things to the kid to make him smile while his mother tearfully collects herself. "This is my friend Lan Zhan," Wei Ying says to the kid when they stop by Wang Ji's table. He looks very serious, doesn't he? "Don't worry, he's nice. That's just his face." "Hello," Wang Ji says to the child, ignoring Wei Ying's attempt to get a rise out of him. The boy buries his face in Wei Ying's shoulder. "That was very kind of you," Wang Ji says later, after the family has gone. "Oh," Wei Ying fidgets. "It's not such a big deal. I was happy to be able to help out. I like kids."
"Me too."
"You do?" Wei Ying laughs. "Lan Zhan, you better watch out, or everyone will find out how soft you are under that hard-boiled exterior, and your crime-fighting days will be over." He pats Wang Ji's shoulder as he walks away. Wang Ji, who dreads casual touch under almost any circumstances, finds he doesn't mind so much when it's Wei Ying doing the touching. His skin doesn't crawl when Wei Ying nudges him with an elbow, or grabs his arm to get his attention, or playfully swats at him when he's done something Wei Ying thinks is funny. It feels almost natural, and Wei Ying wouldn't be Wei Ying without those casual gestures. That the pressure of Wei Ying's palm occasionally causes Wang Ji's blood to heat, his breath to catch, is entirely Wang Ji's own affair and not something that need impact their friendship. He's so lost in thought, he doesn't immediately register the situation unfolding across the cafe. The group of young white dudes in khaki shorts and Patagonia fleece vests are already on their second round of Bloody Marys, beers, and a particularly noxious beer and juice concoction the cafe insists on calling a man-mosa. Their server, Nicole, is pretty and new and a little flustered. They exchange knowing looks as she bustles around, refilling waters and fetching them extra ketchup. By the time their conversation gets loud enough to catch Wang Ji's attention, they have started calling her sweetheart and debating over which of them should get her number. "I'm in love," one of them proclaims to the table. His vest is forest green, and he appears to be the ringleader. When Nicole returns to ask if they'd like another round, the guy in the green vest puts an arm around her waist, holding her in place as they all take their time ordering. She shrinks from the touch but doesn't step away. Wang Ji can see her shoulders rising up around her ears. She grits her teeth in a trembling, embarrassed smile. When they finally release her to go fetch another round of drinks, Wang Ji gives the group of guys a stern, frosty glare. The guy in the green vest grins back and winks patronizingly. Officers of the peace are not supposed to beat the tar out of people, even if it would be very easy for them to do so. When their drinks arrive, it is not pretty new server Nicole who brings them. "All right," Wei Ying sings with a false and somehow threatening cheer Wang Ji's never seen from him. "We have another pitcher of Manny's, two Bloody Marys, and who had the manmosa?" "Hey, where'd my girlfriend go?" the guy in the green vest protests. The consonants in his speech are getting soft. Sloppy drunk at 11 a.m. Great look, Wang Ji thinks. His knuckles throb, and looking down, he realizes he is gripping his fork so hard his nails are digging into his palm. "I'm sorry, I'm not sure what you mean," Wei Ying asks, wide-eyed. His smile is wolf-toothed and dangerous.
The hot waitress,
the guy with aviators propped on top of his head explains, in the loud, over-enunciated tones people use when they assume you don't speak English well.
"Where did she go?"
"She had to go on break. Will there be anything else for you, gentlemen?"
"You should send her back over here," the green vest guy says. "I was just about to give her my big tip."
"Forget the tip. Throw her down and give her the whole thing," another guy hollers. The table bursts into raucous laughter. Wei Ying laughs too, throws his head back, and laughs like a madman. Then he picks up the pitcher of beer and upends it into the green vest guy's lap. The men all jump back from the table and the wave of beer washing outward, cursing.
"What the fuck?" the green vest guy yells. "What the fuck is your problem, dude?"
"Oh, sir, I'm so sorry," Wei Ying makes an exaggerated, apologetic face. "I'm such a klutz. Here, let me get you a towel." He pulls out the bar towel he's got tucked into the back of his apron and attempts to mop some beer off the guy, who shoves him backward. Wei-Ying bounces off a chair with a clatter but doesn't fall down. Everyone in the cafe is staring. Wangji is half out of his seat before he even realizes he's moved.
"What's going on here?"
Greg, the manager, comes barreling out of the back room. "It's my fault," Wei-Ying says. "I'm so clumsy. I spilled a pitcher of beer on this gentleman, and I was just trying to help clean it up."
"He did it on purpose," the guy with the sunglasses says, pointing an accusing finger at Wei-Ying. "He just picked it up and dumped it on him. We all saw it."
Wei-Ying's face twists in contempt, but makes a lightning-fast shift to wide-eyed innocence by the time Greg glances back at him.
"I'm so sorry, gentlemen," Greg says, hands out, placating. "Of course your meal is on the house."
He sets about calming the red-faced bros down,
ushering them out of the spreading puddle of beer that Wei-Ying is already starting to mop up.
Wangji grabs a handful of napkins and kneels to assist him.
"You don't have to help me," Wei-Ying says softly. A muscle jumps in his jaw. He's so tense he's practically vibrating. "This is my job."
Wangji just keeps on mopping. Another server from the cafe, whose name he doesn't know, comes over with a stack of towels to join in.
"Lanchan," Wei-Ying says with slightly more force. "You're getting beer all over you. Leave it alone."
Beer is, in fact, soaking into the knees of his gray twill trousers, but clothing can be washed. Wangji grabs another stack of napkins.
Wei-Ying grabs his wrist.
Wangji's attention narrows to the touch of Wei-Ying's warm fingers against the sensitive skin of his pulse point. He wonders if Wei-Ying notices just how fast his heart is beating.
"Please," Wei-Ying says. "You're going to get me in trouble. In more trouble," he adds with a dry, humorless chuckle.
"Just go sit down, Lanchan, okay? Before you make it worse." Reluctantly, Wangji returns to his seat. The group of beer-soaked bros finally allow Greg to escort them out the door, muttering darkly about Yelp reviews as they go. Turning, Greg stands over Wei-Ying, his arms folded. Wei-Ying just keeps sopping up beer, but Lan Wangji can see his ears flush a deep red.
"When you're done here, come back to the office," Greg says tightly. "I'd like to discuss this little incident with you."
Wangji stands up again. He has no idea what he's going to say, but he feels like he should say something. Wei-Ying catches his eye and shakes his head minutely, and Wangji once again sinks back down, his insides an anxious knot. Wei-Ying strolls back to Greg's office, back straight, head high, an amused little smile playing on his full lips. His hair is falling down from its usual messy bun, the escaped strands draping against the nape of his neck, and Wangji wants to cry. Someone else takes over Wei-Ying's tables. Wangji waits as long as he plausibly can, but Wei-Ying doesn't come back out. Author's end notes. The flute sonata Wei-Ying is playing is Bach's flute sonata in E minor, specifically the first movement, Adagio ma non tanto. It's my favorite of Bach's flute sonatas because, like many things in E minor, it's very feelings. Give it a listen, and there is a link to a YouTube video. Seriously, screw the Space Needle. I forgot to mention this in chapter one, but the title of this fic is from the... I think it must be just pronounced Churches, right? But the U is a V. Churches song, Make Them Gold. A Wangxian banger for the ages. There's also a link to that on YouTube. Thanks to everyone who's commented and left kudos so far. It's a bright spot in my day every time. Come say hi on Tumblr if you're so inclined. Coming soon in chapter 3, an excursion to Carp Tower. A realization. Pining intensifies. All right, well, I'm certainly looking forward to the pining intensifying. And I hope Wei-Ying back then didn't... And we know he didn't get fired because they're asking at his work. And we talked to Nicole. But yeah. All right, well, we have so far learned absolutely nothing about where Wei-Ying might be. I feel like this must be very frustrating for Lan Wangji. I know it's only been one day, but hopefully we're gonna start actually getting closer to finding him soon. I mean, I guess this was chapter 2. There are 10. I think it's going to be a little while. I should chill out. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with chapter 3. Bye.